When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to a Score North podcast right now, and if you're a business owner, so are your customers. In fact, I could be talking about your business right now, telling the tens of thousands of loyal fans about you and sending them to your business. Find out how you can partner with your favorite Score North podcast. Visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner. Fill out the form, and we'll get in touch with you quickly. Once Phil, Judd, Declan, or others start talking about your company, you'll be amazed at how many fans start showing up. So visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner.
All right, Patrick, game five tonight in Memphis. And you know what? If you zoom out for a second here and you see that the Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving Nets just got embarrassingly swept in the first round, winning two games against the number two seed and then being up 26. I mean, the Wolves are putting up probably just as much of a fight as anyone could have hoped for before the series started.
My big thought last night when I was thinking about the NBA playoffs and everything is nice that this is now what the second consecutive year of an unpredictable NBA playoff season, which is kind of nice, isn't it? Now it's, last year the Bucks ended up winning and there were some other upsets along the way. And this year, now because Devin Booker got hurt, but you have the Pelicans, very good chance to advance as a 8 seed. And, the Wolves are 50-50 right now. And there's some of that going on all around the NBA. It's a bunch of the Lakers aren't in the playoffs with the senior citizen team did not make it. It's kind of interesting to have a unpredictable. The NBA is experiencing a little of what the NHL experiences every year. Who's going to win?
Then in the Eastern Conference, so Chris Middleton, the Bucks are going to close out the Bulls, but Chris Middleton is banged up and might not be back until toward the end of the second round. So it is as wide open as you can imagine.
And it's great because, this is the first time since 2004 that the Timberwolves had been in a playoff series and we didn't know who was going to win, because last time, 18, they had a good season, but we knew they weren't going to win because Houston was healthy and, you thought, well, hey, if they really play good, they could win a game. And they did. And that went five. But this is the first time that there's any actual drama since 2004 with this team. So it's fun. And you know what? The bashing that they took last week was fully deserved, but so is the praise for coming back Saturday.
Because
it would have been so easy in the tradition of this franchise to just go out there and lay down like dogs and get beat by 20, couldn't have it? So
what? Yeah, so how do you put into context, I hate Karl Anthony Towns' behavior when he's at his worst. I hate the petulance. I hate it's almost narcissistic. But then he bounces back and so the five games they've played, four in the playoffs and then the Clippers playing game, he's been excellent in two of them and he has train wrecked three of them. How do you put all of that into context?
It's really hard to put into context. My read on this guy is that he is a super sensitive individual who is incapable of taking criticism to the point he even thinks that includes the referees. There's something he's wired as to have been praised his whole life, and he can't take the fact that any time that he faces criticism in any form, he can't handle it. But this officiating thing, I said this to Judd yesterday, Phil, the NBA's got to get a control on this complaint, don't you think? I mean, I'm not a guy who wants to see 25 technicals, but it's ludicrous that every call is somebody. I mean, somebody comes up and gives somebody a karate chop across the head, and then he complains when the official is called. They have to do something. They have to get this under control, because it's, you know, a lot of people are looking for excuses to bash the NBA anyway, because it's this, you know, progressive, blah, blah, politically, they, you know, they're way out on the left side of the political spectrum, which makes them targets. But they look ridiculous. It's not just the Timberwolves. It's not just Carl Anthony Towns. It's everybody.
Yeah.
You can't have that complaining about every call. It's a game made for that, to complain about. It's the most difficult game there is to officiate. You know, 10 large men in a small area, but they got to do something. They have to do something.
I've never thought about it that way, but they're, it's 10 large men over 6 feet tall, some very much over 6 feet tall, playing in a small area. And Taylor Jenkins, by the way, the Memphis coach. Yes. So he goes on this rant and calls the officiating arrogant and atrocious. You know, Memphis by far is averaging more free throws per game than the other playoff teams across the entire league. They are number one in free throw attempts per game.
By the way, here he is, a leader of men, right? He gets fined $15,000.
Yeah.
Every time Pat Beverly turns around and scowls at somebody, he gets $25,000. You know, he gets $30,000. They're stealing his. That, I thought he'd get $50,000, you know, by throwing out the arrogant word, you know, that, you know, these guys are too arrogant to call the game right, is what he's saying. And he's a coach, and he only gets fined $15,000. Those must be Memphis prices or something. But, it was, but again, I would imagine if you're the Wolves, you got through the first quarter on Saturday with very few fouls called, you know, and Cat didn't get fouled, you know, didn't get fouls, and so everything was fine. You got to be paranoid tonight that he's going to get three in the first quarter every time he and Jackson come together and bang into each other. Those are all 50-50. When they hit each other, it's just, it is official's whim as to which guy they want to call a foul on, because there's a foul there. And, you know, Cat still has to, even though he made it through the last game, game four, he still has to be careful to get dumb fouls, because there's a very good chance that there's nobody in history who can go from one to three quicker than this moron at times, right? I mean, oh, you call one on me, I'll show him, and I'll bang into the guy the next time down the court. And, you know, turn around, scream at an official, and then next time down the court, do the same damn thing and think you're not going to get called for a foul. You got to be an idiot.
Yeah. And he doesn't, there's no nuance. There's no strategic thought.
No.
You know?
No, he is out of control. But have we received a great breakdown as to, I'm not enough of a genius to, what did they do differently to actually get the ball to him in game four when they didn't do anything in game three?
Yeah.
They didn't do anything to get the game. Now, my theory is in game three, they didn't have to get the ball to him until crunch time, right? Because they were up 25, you know, whatever they were doing was working. And then when it stopped working, they said, we can't get the ball to him. We can't, but that was a poorly coached, poorly executed, god-awful meltdown. But to come back and win game four was pretty damn impressive. And
yep.
I don't know. In Memphis, are they bashing Ja Morant now like we bashed?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, I guess it would be fun to sample. I don't know one way or the other, but I think they love him so much, and his personality is so great.
Plus, it's not a market with 30 years of history of, you know, 30 years of being in the playoffs, 10 out of 30.
I mean, where people, if we did a, last week, we did a a pecking order of the 10 greatest Timberwolves individual playoff performances. And boy, we had to dig deep for that one.
Yes.
There was a Dean Garrett 26-15 in there somewhere from the late 90s. But there was a game, I think it was the decisive game five against the Sonics in like 98 or 99, you know, one of those years. And Anthony Peeler went off for like 28 or 30 points, and the Wolves were leading at halftime. But I'm 90% sure I'm right on this game. But KG and Marbury combined for like 14 points in the game, wow. And they lost, you know, the decisive game five.
Remind me, is that the series? That was a best of five, and they led it 2-1, right? Didn't they lead?
And then
it
they lose the next two. Yeah.
Didn't the Wolves lead that one 2-1? I thought
you might be right. I can look it up real quick. But I guess my question to you was: did people fillet the young nucleus of Marbury and KG for a failure?
I have a hunch we didn't, because we saw all the glories of this tandem that were in front of us, which, of course, blew up about 20 minutes later when Steph, we gave Kevin Garnett this maximum deal, $105 million or whatever it was. But now they have put in new rules, Steph. We can't pay you this much,
yeah.
Steph, okay? This is the max we can pay you. He said, I don't care. I want as much as Kevin is making. That was, I had to think, trying to talk logic to Steph was a very difficult task.
Yes.
Because you could not explain to him that you couldn't do this, which he insisted had to be done.
So. Yeah. Well, and this was the second year of their playoff run, and it was, you're right, they were up 2-1. It was a 5-game series. They lost game four at home, 92-88, and then they went back to Seattle. They were leading at halftime by 3 points. In the game, so Marbury played 45 minutes, Peeler played 43, KG played 42. KG went 3-11, ooh, 7 points, 10 turnovers.
Oof. What?
Yes.
10 turnovers.
Stephon Marbury went 7 points, 5 turnovers on 2 of 10 from the floor. So the two core star players absolutely soiled themselves in this game.
I'll have to go back and look and see if we wrote that this guy's never going to make it.
Right. Month. And so that's my question here is, and I'm asking it to myself too, because I was like, I said some things about Towns after game three. And everything I said about his behavior, I stand by. It's embarrassing the way that he acts sometimes, but how much of what we're seeing in some of these ugly games is, well, you gotta kind of take your lumps in the postseason and take criticism and grow from it versus, yeah, this might be who you are.
Yeah, that's well, that's true. Plus, you know, clunkers happen. I guess you'd have to say he's had three clunkers, so that's a pattern. There's no doubt about it. But you know, sometimes a guy went 0-4, you know, mm-hmm. with 3 strikeouts, and it wasn't Miguel Sano. It was somebody who can actually hit, you know.
Hey, he's up to 0-83 now. So.
Yeah, yes. But, you know, it is funny how in the NBA, we put a historical significance into it as though it's a football game, right? In the play, you know, instead of a 4-day-a-week task that you're playing, but in a baseball game, it's just you had a bad day. You know, that's the difference. Sometimes in basketball, you got a bad day and you're not making shots, and then I don't know. Everything was wrong last week, but hey, I'm interested to see what's going on tonight, and we get a 6:40 start too, so it doesn't have to be 12:30 in the morning.
It's great. Yeah. Okay, over on the baseball side of town here. So Rocco Baldelli said after Sunday's game that Byron Buxton is the best baseball player in the world. I agree. When he's on the field, I agree. Do you think that's an overstatement?
Yes. I think even when he's on the field and playing with some consistency, you help stir people up on that, by the way, that they're now trying to declare him to be better than Puck.
I would never.
Declare him to be better than Puck. Some moron.
Well, I never said that.
well, they have reached this, and everybody's saying in his last 150 games, who gives a damn? It's been 3 years.
Okay. I may have stirred that one. Yeah.
I said, who gives a damn? It's not supposed to take 3 years to play a 162 game season.
Listen, one of those was a pandemic shortened season.
Yes,
okay.
Okay. Listen, I looked it up yesterday. He's batting 400 the last 5 years, meaning he has batted in 400. He's 401 is his appearance average.
Yeah.
he's played in 40% of the last of the games in the last 5 years. So, God, I love him as a player, too. I've been saying for 3 years they're 20% better when he's on the field, you know, in all areas. But, and it was a great lesson of baseball, that unbelievable, monstrous home run he hit off that pitch high and hard, and because he wouldn't have had a chance to touch it for the first 4 years he spent in the big leagues. It's a lesson as to how hard this game is to master, isn't it? How long it took this guy to become a hitter. I mean, 5 years ago, he was hitting 150 and they had to send him to the minor leagues. He had no chance. He had no chance. Take strike one, foul strike two. They could have thrown the third pitch in the dugout and he would have swung at it for two years. It was the most inept thing, worse than Snow's ever been.
Yeah. Don't you think it's also like when you get up there with a plan and some confidence, so you now know what you're looking for, where you're looking for it, and you know you can hit it, get out front of it, and that's what we're seeing with him.
And the best thing he ever did was 3 years ago, he told everybody to shut up. I'm going to go back to what I did when I got out of high school, which see the ball, hit it as hard as I can, instead of get my leg kick and, you know, get into a hitter's count.
Who gave him the leg kick? Was that Bruno? Was that Tom Bernanski back?
No, that was, Torrey? Advised it to him. I think Torrey Hunter.
Torrey.
Oh, right? No. Torrey Hunter.
Torrey.
When he was really struggling, they thought he needed a timing mechanism. No, he needed a brain mechanism. there's nothing that drives. What amazes me is he had Molitor as a manager. Molitor's the best first pitch fastball hitter I ever saw in my life. You couldn't throw, even when he was 38, you couldn't throw a first pitch fastball past him because he was ready to hit it.
Yeah.
And how he could not have any influence to get this guy ready to hit when he was a kid is amazing to me. The number of first pitch fastballs that were right down the pipe that he took was what killed him, as far as I'm concerned. And he's finally, and now they don't throw him the first pitch fastball down the pipe because they know he's ready to hit it.
Yeah. Well, so last year he batted, we threw this out a few weeks ago, he swung at the first pitch 46 times last year, 23 hits. Three of them were, he got hit by the first pitch three times. So he was 23 of 43 on first pitches. And 15 of those 23 were extra base hits last year.
And in 2017, they all would have been strikes.
Right.
Because he wouldn't have
swung. Hanging out with Joe Mauer too much. You know, Joe Mauer was good enough to, by the way, this year, he has swung at the first pitch four times this year. He's 3 for 4 with a home run and a double.
Yes, because they aren't throwing him.
So he's hitting like 600 on the first pitch the last 2 years.
They aren't throwing him those same first pitches that he used to always get. And Joe, I don't think Joe ever came to him and said, you got to hit like me. But I think that was sort of a mentality going through the organization.
Professional at bats.
Yeah. Professional bat. Getting a hitter's count. This is the best pitch you're going to see. Hit it.
Yeah. The first pitch, by the way, is a hitter's count because, and coming from a guy that quit baseball high school, but like, if you know what this is what hitting coaches would say, and we had enough conversations on our radio shows throughout the years with the Molitors and the Bernanskis. Okay. First pitch, if it's this pitch in this location, I am swinging and I'm going to barrel it up. Right. But if you get up there and you're like, I'm going to take the first pitch or not have a game plan. you're going to get behind. You're screwed.
You know what I'm a little worried about is the Larnick kid. He likes to, I think he's still the flat-out guess hitter. Did you see him the other day?
Mm-hmm.
Bases loaded, 3-2 pitch, right down the pipe. Not ready. You're not ready to hit that pitch with the bases loaded?
Yeah.
You know, you're guessing breaking ball. You can't. You got to be able to adjust. And he takes a whole bunch of pitches, that guy. He's still a – I like some things about him, but he's one guy that's, you know, he's still up there guessing at every pitch that they throw. So, but there's something going on there. But that's, you know, that's – the young Buxton might have done that too, but you throw the Buxton that pitch that Larnick took for strike three with the bases loaded, and it would have been in the same place the other one was. So the other thing is swing is just, you know, he's going when it's not as long as it was. He's going. I think he starts at a little different place, but then he finishes big. But I never imagined him becoming this strong. Did you?
Oh, boy.
This strong, you know, I mean, that he could hit it up there. I thought he would be a line drive gap hitter who would hit 18 home runs and if he was really, really got good.
Yeah.
But this is, he's done some serious work in the offseason.
It also shows you, like, you look at golfers and you think, oh, you know, if you want to hit the ball far, you know, for years, you got to build muscle. But then you look at a guy like Dustin Johnson, it's mm-hmm. less about how bulky and big you are, and it's more about the whip on your swing, and he's a lanky guy. So
yeah, he is. He's and he's done. I mean, he's done great things with himself physically, I think, in the off seasons, and I also with his own trainers. By the way, he's gone back to Georgia and said, "Leave me alone.
Yeah,
I'm not going to hit the way you wanted me to hit, and I'm not. You know, I don't. I got to think the new hitting coach might say, how you doing, Brian, Byron? And he says, I'm fine, you know, and keeps on going.
Because, have a good day, sir. Yep.
This is this was a guy that had 22 thoughts in his head when he came to the plate 5 years ago, and now he's got one.
So since Declan threw this out on the Score North Twitter account today, so over the last, so if you go back to 2019, so he's played in about half the games. So he's played in about 200 games. He has not played in 203 games. When he plays, this is from Jeff Passan.
Yes.
The Twins are 50 games above 500 with a plus 233 run differential. When he doesn't, the Twins are 15 games below 500 with a minus 97 run differential. It's a 100-win pace when he plays. It's a 75-win pace when he doesn't since the beginning of 2019.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt about it. His influence is incredible. But the one last thing about him as a hitter, there's a famous story about, you know, Jimmy Wiesner was the old equipment manager of the Twins and big buddies of Gaetti and Herbeck, and would go out and have cocktails with them. And there's a guy was in the next hotel room, and Wies was in bad shape coming home that night. And Gaetti and Herbeck were with him, and they were trying to push him in his room. And he was holding on each side of the door screaming, "See the ball! Hit the ball! See the ball," which is what Herbeck and Gaetti was battle cry was. And that's what he's doing. See the ball, hit the ball. He has taken all the other crap out of it, and he's see the ball, hit the ball. Which is interesting because Correa is the opposite. He's got all the, you know, he goes to the plate with all the analytics in his mind. I'd like to see him, the real him, here pretty soon, wouldn't you?
Well, I did see a report. This might be a genius time to put the report out when he's off to a slow start. But someone reported that he is open to a conversation about a long-term contract with the Twins. So,
sure.
If it starts with $280 million, 9 years.
That's true. So, Scott Boras has never been open to I see Scott got exposed on the Conforto thing, though. He kept Conforto. He's Conforto's agent. Yeah, he's healthy. He's ready. He turned down 18 mil. You know, he turned down a qualifying offer. And he didn't play. Didn't play spring training. But they kept swearing he was healthy. Now he had to have shoulder surgery.
Yeah.
So they were trying to get a contract for him while he was hurt, which is kind of...
He feels great. Trust me. Where is he? We haven't seen him. No, don't worry about it.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, Scott has never given anybody a bargain on anything. So
no. All right, we'll get your full Vikings 7-round mock draft tomorrow. We ran out of time for it today. We'll get your full 7-round mock draft tomorrow on the show.
Stingley, even though he only played 3 games last year, you got to take the corner if he's there, right? Don't you? I see you.
Well, Pro Football Focus, actually, they put their final big board out today, and he's the second best player in the draft, according to. So if that's how, and I know Kwesi has sort of that PFF analytics mind and works with people with that company. So if he's there, they probably take him.
There isn't a quarterback in this draft who should be drafted in the first 3 rounds. And a couple of these are going to get drafted ahead of them, which shows you how stupid teams are.
Desperate.
None of these quarterbacks can play.
I would take a chance on Malik Willis. I would take a chance if I had the right coach and people in place. But the other ones?
No. But it's really amazing how, you know, Christian Ponders of the world are now first-round draft choices. It's we should go back to the days when the NFL was – We're going to draft this kid, and he's going to play in 4 years anyway. What do we care? Not going to play anyway.
So. Yep. All right, Pat. Yeah, we'll see you tomorrow. Wrapping with Royce here, presented by our friends at Federated Mutual Insurance Company. It's draft week. Mm-hmm. A lot of risks, potential risks to be taken. Well, Federated is all about mitigating risk and limiting the potential for risk against your company. You can find out more about how Federated can elevate your business to new levels at federatedinsurance.com, where it's our business to protect yours.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 1. She was a city girl, but always somewhere else in her head. Somewhere where bison roam, rivers flow, and people get their hiking boots dirty. Like, actually dirty. So one day she fled west and discovered this place of beauty, history, and a delicious taste of adventure. But before she knew it, she was driving away with memories to share and the hopes of returning. Because there's so much South Dakota, so little time.